Welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us from Vancouver is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, as usual, you're a busy man on the road. Prior to this stop in Vancouver, you were at the Metals and Minerals Conference in San Francisco. How was that show?
I found that show not particularly well attended, but the companies, as this bear market gets deeper, the companies exhibiting get better, and I think the intelligence and education of the average investor gets better, too.
Okay, well, you know what? That might be a topic for a future show. Interesting observations there. Meantime, though, we are continuing our special focus on specialty metals critical for modern technology. We've talked about gallium and germanium. For this program, we're taking a look at indium. I believe it's number 49 on the periodic table, Mickey, discovered in the 1860s. Fill us in on the history.
Yes, it was discovered in 1863, once again in our favorite place for discovery of metals, and that's in Freiburg in Saxony. It was discovered during the spectral analysis with a spectral line that was indigo blue, therefore the name indium. In the World's Fair of 1867, there was a 1/2 kilogram bar of indium on display, and you can imagine the price of that particular bar of indium.
Okay, and this is looking at the characteristics of indium, Mickey, a very soft metal, and I understand so soft that pull out a pocket knife, you can go right through it. Is that true?
Yeah, not only that, but it leaves a streak on paper. So it, for geologists out there, it has a Mohs hardness of 1.2, very soft, malleable, silvery white. It's also ductile, and interestingly enough, when you bend it, it issues what has been described as either a high-pitched cry or a high-pitched scream.
Really?
So it has a very low melting point, high density, and two natural isotopes, one which is slightly radioactive, but at 4 times the age of the universe.
Once again, this is another one of those metals, too, that's really a byproduct of other mining activity, in this case, really predominantly zinc deposits.
That's correct. Mainly production comes from zinc smelters and refineries, but it also occurs with copper ores and tin ores and some silver ores. So there's a bunch of places in the world that it is produced, but once again, production is dominated by China at about 60%, but also significant production comes out of smelters in Trail, BC is actually the world's largest single producer. Canada's, Japan, South Korea, Belgium, places where there are big base metal smelters.
Okay, and when you talk about that big smelter in Trail, BC, that's Teck, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Mickey, let's talk about the early uses for this metal, and I believe we've got to turn the clock back to about the 1920s before it was really identified. There's an identifiable use for this en masse?
That's correct. It was used to stabilize alloys of other base metals. By World War II, it was used to coat aircraft engine bearings. And then in the 1950s, it was discovered to be a semiconductor, and that was the beginnings of transistor radios, et cetera. So it was used in LEDs, semiconductors, had some uses in alloys and solders. By the 1970s, it was being used in additionally in nuclear control rods because it can absorb a lot of neutrons. And then the uses really boomed starting in the 1990s with the advent of LCDs, and that is now over 50% of the use, basically for flat screen TVs.
Is the demand based on that the uses in LCD monitors and television sets, is the demand on the rise? Because I get the feeling, you know, your computer monitor and your modern television set today, Mickey, they're like commodities, you know, that you have them for X number of years, they break down, you throw them out, and you get a new one because the prices are have moved lower.
It's true, and the technology keeps getting better and better. This use is indium-10 oxide, so-called ITO. LCDs, the global capacity is really driven and demand driven by flat screen TVs and mm-hmm. and also LCDs. You see, like when I go into an office in Vancouver anymore and I go look at the directory, it's a touch screen. So mm-hmm. those touch screens are the demand for those is quite high. We also have ongoing demands with alloys and solders. I found out that white gold commonly has indium in it now. Mm. Then also LEDs, laser diodes, and I know you have long-term surveillance on many people around where you live, so your infrared cameras have indium in them, Rob.
Yeah, that's right. We're broadcasting live from my compound, Mickey, and I've got all kinds of security around me. Let's move on, Mickey, to the demand-supply scenario here. Production and supply, is enough of this being produced today to meet demand?
Well, barely. So as demand increases, there is some concern. There's less than 20 years of known reserves. The world production is still quite small, about 660 tons per year, but recycling is becoming very important, especially places where televisions are built, such mm-hmm. as Japan and Korea. The U.S. has no primary production, even from their own zinc and lead smelters, but we do have a couple of plants here that recycle scrap and refine imported metals to higher purity. Because of this supply-demand scenario and the concern about long-term or even short-term supply, prices are quite volatile, commonly $200 or $300 per kilogram difference over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. In 2012, prices have dropped 20% from 2011, but it still is probably averaging, in 2012, from $485 to $670dollars per kilogram. And a lot of this has to do with the Chinese, the biggest suppliers. They're put on their usual export restrictions and quotas, etc.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, whether or not China's playing any tricks, because, you know, you and I have talked about rare earths before quite extensively and other specialty metals where China is the big gorilla in the room, and you know, it does various things to move that price and deliberately, and we're seeing that, are we, sometimes with this one?
Oh, most definitely. Mm-hmm. And because of that price volatility, of course, then people throughout the world, engineers and scientists, start looking for substitutes. Mm-hmm. And there are many substitutes. For the ITOs, indium 10 oxide LCD coatings, flat screen TVs, et cetera, there's at least four or five different substitutes being looked at now or actually with applications. Mm-hmm. An antimony tin oxide, carbon nanotubes, some plastics, zinc oxide nanopowders. So in nuclear control rods, of course, hafnium is probably the metal of choice in those. And then in semiconductors and solar cells, something we've talked about before, gallium arsenide, is a substitute. So generally when countries or companies start to manipulate prices, then comes in the substitution.
Okay, so we have a lot of substitutes out there. Recycling is on the ride, and it makes for a real roller coaster of a price performance for the commodity itself. When you throw all that together, and you're perhaps maybe a junior exploration company, and you're looking at what is taking place in that market, does that make it a market that you really want to dive deeper into, or do you want to kind of look at something else?
Well, there have been a litany of failed junior projects over the last, say, 5 or 6 years. A project in Utah East Kentville in Nova Scotia, Mount Pleasant in New Brunswick, a major discovery in Bolivia. Now, bear in mind, these are basically tin or zinc projects that have significant amounts of indium in them, but there was a nationalization of a project in Bolivia and a failed junior. There's in southern Santa Cruz province of Argentina, there's a junior working on that. These projects, have, if they have not failed over the last couple of years, they are likely not to make mines anytime in the near future. So juniors have tried, but they have not succeeded.
Okay, and as far as the big seniors go, the big boys producing zinc and whatnot, this is just a very minor part of their operation too, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you know, it's the same old thing with the smelters is the robber barons at the smelter profit, and you don't get paid for your indium, certainly not in the most cases. And so it's one of these metals that mm-hmm. the smelters profit from and the miners do not.
Okay, anything else you wanted to add on this one, Mickey?
I think that's about it, Rob.
Okay, next time out it will be the Ho 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 special Christmas edition of Mercenary Musings Radio. What do you got up your sleeve?
Well, the next metal, specialty metal, dopant, whatever you want to call it on our list would be tellurium. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about tellurium. And interestingly enough, tellurium also often occurs in gold deposits, as gold tellurides.
Okay, good stuff. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, Mickey. Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.